Feeling trapped is maddening. Trapped in a job, trapped by a financial crisis, trapped in a relationship. So here's the question. Why does God allow his children to feel stuck? What does he want us to learn when we're caught between a rock and a hard place? Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll will answer these questions and more. In Exodus chapter 14, we find the Israelites standing at the shore of the Red Sea with the Egyptian army in hot pursuit. Chuck titled today's message, Between the Devil and the Deep Red Sea.
Okay, let's turn to Exodus chapter 14 this evening as we enjoy the Lord together through his word once again. I want to talk tonight about those lessons we learn when we are in a predicament. Oh, we Americans have a number of words that we use to describe a predicament, don't we? If you're from the East, then you probably are familiar with the words being in a kettle of fish, being in a pinch. You like to cook, you're in a jam, in a pickle. If you're from the South, you're between the rock and the hard place. You heard that one? That's an old familiar one. There are all different kinds of expressions. Up a wall, up a tree, in a corner, up against it. Hard pressed. The Columbus Dispatch had a pretty good description of a predicament, and I took it down so I wouldn't forget it. They said a predicament occurs when an attorney who specializes in medical malpractice suits finds himself in need of major surgery. That's a predicament. It may very well be that this night you are in a predicament. You might be in that predicament because of an unwise or maybe an unfortunate series of decisions that you have made. You might find yourself in the predicament absolutely out of your own control. Your situation might be related to a child that is now grown and out from under your wing and out of the nest, but not walking with the Lord. He's too old to discipline, and yet you're in the dilemma of realizing that you're still the parent and you want very much for your boy or your girl to be walking with God, but he's not. To say something might make it worse. To say nothing, you feel, would be less than what you should do. You're in a jam. It might be related to your work, where if you say something to relieve the pressure, it might get worse. Or it might make somebody else look bad if you try to work it out yourself. The predicament might be related to something at school or something in your home right now. It might be a relational thing. And you find yourself squeezed into a tight place, and you can't get out. You're in a predicament. You are under the circumstances. Thomas Paine referred to such times as those times that try men's souls. And they do, don't they? Perhaps the marks on your face are beginning to grow larger because you have attempted to work it out and it simply will not clear up. Well, you will find a measure of comfort in the 14th of Exodus because it is the most involved predicament that Israel ever found itself in and lived through. You might be interested to know that the crossing of the Red Sea is to the Old Testament what the resurrection is to the New. When the prophets and the writers of Scripture wanted in the Old Testament to refer back to God's miraculous hand more often than any other miracle, they went back to this one. Just as in the New Testament, when any writer of the New Testament books wanted to illustrate the power of God, he would most often go to the resurrection. So what the resurrection is to the new, the crossing of the Red Sea is to the old. But the scene is altogether different. However, both were miracles from the hands of God. Before I go any further, let me say that it might very well be that the only answer to your predicament is a miracle. First of all, an inner miracle in your life to change a habit pattern that you have set up for all your years. And it's been my discovery that those patterns that are most deeply set in us take a very tight place to break. Now, with that in mind, let's understand that the Israelites had been living in Egypt all their days. There wasn't one Israelite who was delivered from God's hand under Moses' leadership who had not been born and raised in Egypt. Their entire lifestyle was Egyptian to the core. To the core. They had picked up the habits, the earmarks, the whole style of Egypt. And as a result, God wanted to teach them a new lifestyle. And in order for him to do it, perhaps better to get their attention, he brought them to the Red Sea. That's just what he's done with some of you. Now, before we look into the 14th of the Exodus, look at the 13th chapter and the 18th verse. Get a pencil in your hand, and I want you to mark a couple of things. One thing I want you to mark is in verse 18, and another thing I want you to mark is in verse 21. Verse 18 of chapter 13, "Hence God led the people around by the way of the wilderness to the Red Sea." I want you to mark, God led the people to the Red Sea. Just check that or circle it or underscore it. God led the people to the Red Sea. Obviously, what I want you to notice is that they're coming to this impasse, to this place, this strait betwixt two, was of God's direction. He knew that they needed the Red Sea experience to learn some things from him. They needed to learn early in their journey. That's the first thing I want you to mark. Now look at verse 21. Mark this. The Lord was going before them. That's the second thing. Verse 18, God led them. Verse 21, the Lord was going before them. Now, let's just read on through verse 21 and notice how God went before them. It's a very interesting thing. He was going before them in a pillar of cloud by day to lead them on the way, and in a pillar of fire by night to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people. That's an incredible thing. You and I have never had that experience. They never had the absence of it. Have you wrestled recently with the will of God? I have. Some of my deepest wrestlings have been in the area of discerning the will of God. At times I have looked with envy on the Israelites for a cloud by day and a fire by night. That was as easy as follow the leader. When the cloud moved forward, they moved forward. When the cloud moved to the starboard side, they'd move over to the starboard side. When it'd move over to the port, they'd move over to the port. When it would go back, they'd go back. When it stopped, they'd stop. Just as simple as ABC. At night, you couldn't see a cloud. So God vanished the cloud and brought the fire. Kept them warm, hushed away those animals and beasts of the desert and gave them unerring guidance. Day or night, all they had to do was look up. There was God's direction. He went before them. Wouldn't that be great? You wonder if it's God's will for you to move. Just look up. There's the cloud. It's going toward Baltimore. Get on your horse. You wonder if it's God's will for you to work here. Watch the fire. It moves right over there to that place of employment, and it rests there. You just go and get a job. It's no question. Just follow the leader. Now, I'm making it overly simple because that's what it was for the Israelites. There was no question. It wasn't a judgment call. The pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud went right to the Red Sea and stopped. And that's where they went and stopped. Why? Why would God box them in and hold them in that tight place? Well, let's look. Verse 1, chapter 14. The Lord spoke to Moses. Now, you see, the reason God spoke to Moses is because this leader had been prepared. Remember, he was 80 years young. He had learned his lessons. He had done homework in the Midian desert. He had discovered you don't question God. When he says, go to the Red Sea, you get on your horse. You don't wait. So God said to Moses, tell the sons of Israel to turn back and camp before Pi-hahiroth, between Migdal and the sea. You shall camp in front of Baal Zephon, opposite it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say to the sons of Israel, he will say of the sons of Israel, they are wandering aimlessly in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. But Moses, I will harden Pharaoh's heart. He'll fall into the trap. He will chase after the Israelites, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am Jehovah. And they did so. Now, that sounds fairly simple. Take the sheet you got when you came in and look at the map on the back. Let's look at these spots that you've probably never seen before in any serious manner. Look at the section of the map marked A2. On the far west side, the land of Goshen. You see it written on the diagonal there? Well, that's where the Hebrews lived before the Exodus. They actually lived in that area of land called Ramses. Find that in the land of Goshen. That's where the arrow starts. So when the Exodus occurred, they left Ramses and went as far south as Etham. Find that. It was there, according to chapter 13 and verse 20, that they camped. And that is apparently where the Lord spoke to Moses and told him what we just read. While they were in Etham, the Lord said, look, go up as far as Baal Zephon. We would say, backtrack. Go back over those various steps you have just taken all the way up to Baal Zephon. Now, find that on your map. See the arrow going back north? Now, let me just fill you in on something. Baal Zephon was a perfect geographical cul-de-sac. Okay? It was a dead-end street. Just to the north of them stood the formidable Egyptian fortresses, stone, massive structures. No way they could get through there. To the south rested the Egyptian desert, marked Mizraim, right along the vertical. See Egypt right below it, Mizraim. So there was this great, massive, vast desert. No protection there. To the west was Ramses and Goshen. That's where they had been. They couldn't go back to Egypt. To the east, the Red Sea, marked here as the Gulf of Suez, the northernmost section, literally the Reed Sea or the Sea of Reeds. It's most often translated the Red Sea. So before them was the Red Sea. To the north, strong fortresses. To the south, Egypt. To the west, Egypt itself. They were boxed in. God said, however, go to Baal Zephon. It was the most Militarily, it was the most vulnerable spot to be in. It's like being chased by a car full of thieves and you make a turn down a dead-end street. The most foolish decision in the world is to drive down a dead-end street when you're being followed. That's what God told them to do. But you see, Moses had walked with God long enough to know that even though something seemed foolish, he wasn't to question it. And God was gracious enough to say to Moses, look, I've got a plan that is profound. Pharaoh is going to think, as he gets word by the grapevine, as you wander back and forth, that you're aimlessly wandering in the desert. And he'll think, they're going up north to Baal Zephon. I'll trap them there. That's the trap that Pharaoh will fall into. You see, God had it all arranged because the Lord wanted to fight the battle for the Hebrews. You see, now listen carefully. For all their lives, they had been fighting their own battles. They had been cinching up another notch in their belt and taking it on with their own strength. And the Lord says, no, Moses, I want my people to learn that I will fight their battles for them. All they've got to do is to wait and to trust. So go up to Baal Zephon. I'll talk about Baal Zephon in a minute in just a little more detail. But let's go back to the passage now. Look at chapter 14, verse 5. Now the plot begins to thicken. Exactly as God predicted, Pharaoh reacted. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his servants had a change of heart toward the people. And they said, what is this we have done, that we have let Israel go from serving us? So he made his chariot ready and took his people with him. And he took 600 select chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he chased after the sons of Israel as the sons of Israel were going out boldly. That's an interesting phrase, by the way. They start going north thinking, God is in this. This is going to be a great experience. They went out boldly toward Baal Zephon. Verse 9, then the Egyptians chased after them with all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh. You can just hear them thundering in your mind. Here they come, his horsemen and his army, and they overtook them camping by the sea in front of Baal Zephon. Now suddenly, the scene changes. Picture it. You're one among 2 million in the camp of the Israelites. You have brought yourself with the people of God up into this cul-de-sac. Moses has taken the lead and he said, look, this is where God would have us go. And all the time you're thinking, well, I know there's a way out because we've just come up to this area. We can get out this way. And suddenly, you hear the chariots of Egypt. You look up and there's a cloud of dust in the distance. And the grapevine travels back saying, Pharaoh is coming. There's going to be a massacre at Baal Zephon. So panic strikes. Now listen to verse 10 through verse 12 with a great deal of practical insight. You will almost hear your testimony. Verse 10. As Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. That's the understatement of the chapter, by the way. They were scared to death when they saw the Egyptians. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. That's the first time you read of the people of Israel en masse crying out to God. By the way, isn't it remarkable what a predicament will do to your independent spirit? Isn't it remarkable you walk along with real swagger and you strut your way through life like a human peacock until suddenly you come to the end of the rope and you begin to realize, hey, I'm in a jam. And you look up and you cry out. We're not told what they said. But after they had cried out to God in human form, they began to blame somebody else. And if you're honest with yourself, that's usually the way you handle a predicament. The first response, if you're really in touch with God, is to cry out. And the second response is to, after a while, when relief hasn't come, you begin to look to someone to blame. And so they naturally picked the preacher. verse 11. Then they said to Moses, Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Now listen to verse 12. We told you so. Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. We would rather be in safety as slaves than to be free men in danger. That's a human perspective, isn't it?
Chuck Swindoll is setting the stage for some practical application. He's teaching from Exodus chapter 14, and he titled today's message, Between the Devil and the Deep Red Sea. Keep listening, because Chuck brought a ministry colleague into the studio today. We have the privilege of getting an insider's look at the global impact of Insight for Living, and Chuck will make that introduction in just a moment. First, I want to remind you that you can dig deeper into Chuck's biography of Moses by requesting our brand new Searching the Scriptures Bible Study Workbook. This spiral-bound resource covers all 20 messages in Chuck's series, and by using it, you'll be following the same study methods that Chuck uses to prepare his sermons. Our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies are available right now when you call us at 800-772-8888 or just go to insight.org/workbooks. Well, you might be listening to this program all by yourself right now, but did you realize you're actually joined by a worldwide audience? Countless men and women from all points on the globe are listening today alongside you. It's because of an initiative that was launched several years ago in which we asked God to help us reach all 195 countries of the world. We call it Vision 195. Chuck wanted you to meet one of the leaders here at Insight for Living who's engaged with this visionary mission. So Chuck, introduce us.
Today I'm sitting across the table from one of the most well-traveled men I've ever known. Tom Hayes leads our international ministry here at Insight for Living, and he and I have known each other, worked closely together for about 18 years, and I have to tell you, the longer I work alongside Tom, the more I admire you, Tom, for the way you stay at it and your incredible ability to travel, come back, and look like you haven't traveled. I mean, it's amazing. But I want you to share with our folks today just a slice of our Vision 195 ministry. Would you do that?
Absolutely, Chuck. It's been 18 amazing years, so thank you for that. Vision 195 is Insight for Living's goal. It's our calling to be in all 195 countries of the world. So we go through the doors that the Lord opens to us with your sermons, with your content. But we do it a little bit uniquely in that we have pastors on the ground who are doing the work that are part of our leadership team. Recently, we had our Portuguese ministry, which is headquartered in the country of Brazil. They just took a mission trip over to two countries in Africa that are also Portuguese-speaking. And so on this trip, we had the opportunity to train pastors in these local settings. So it's pretty great. Not only are the countries of Angola and Mozambique hearing the broadcast in their native language, now we have a chance to impact the local church through this training of pastors. We train them in your Searching the Scriptures Bible study methods to help them understand how to better approach the Scriptures. A couple testimonies I'll read real quick. One from a pastor in Angola said, our hope is that more and more people will be blessed through these studies with the goal of awakening and opening minds to impact a world that is blind and lost without Christ. And then one pastor in Mozambique said, it was a great blessing to be part of this training. It's needed, especially in our Mozambican culture, where we are very superficial. Learning about observation and all the other steps of the material was very important. I believe that you have left a great seed here for the church and for the leaders who will become much more involved in the ministry work, which is the faithful preaching of the Word of God.
Thanks, Tom. This is fabulous information. And today you've made a quick trip, not only from Brazil, where the Portuguese language is spoken, but across the waters to other countries as well. And that reminds me that when you are donating your gift to Insight for Living, you're spreading the message to people who are lost and blind. They do not know the truth. And this is their opportunity to hear it and, best of all, to respond to it. So thanks so much for your generosity.
You know, we can't succeed in reaching all 195 countries of the world without the financial support of friends like you. To join us, we invite you to give a generous year-end gift to Insight for Living. You can do that by going to insight.org/donate. Or if you want to send a check in the mail, you can address your envelope to Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. Our phone number again is 800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org/donate. Ever find yourself in a jam? I'm Bill Meyer. Don't miss Chuck Swindoll's helpful message Tuesday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Between the Devil and the Deep Red Sea, was copyrighted in 1975, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.